but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a 0.08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a 0.08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
You know, it's been an evaluation of the whole year. I do believe in Coach Christian. He's a good coach, and he's proven that through a long career. And I believe in him. You know, the last 2 weeks, we've had short weeks. You know, obviously, short week playing on Friday, and then the travel made it a short week, so it wasn't the time to do it then. And then just an evaluation of, okay, we got a finally full week into a bye week. If we're going to do it, this would be the time. And just it just continued to be a problem, so we made that decision.
Continue to be a problem. The problem that I'm having with Oregon State's firing of Jamie Christian, their special teams coach, yesterday, the news breaks. The problem I'm having with it is how reactive it looks. You want to make proactive moves as a business, as a coaching staff, as an athletic department. But Oregon State ends up making the right move several weeks too late in pivoting away from Jamie Christian. They are throwing him to the wolves, seemingly. I mean, there's a metaphor here. Christian thrown to the lions, thrown to the wolves. Oregon State gets it right. Like, he wasn't performing. But we knew that after week two. The fact that they waited after losing to Texas Tech and losing to Oregon and still looking bad on special teams, coming out and losing the football game to Houston. They had two field goals that were blocked. Then they come back. They missed a short field goal last weekend in a what was an embarrassing loss, I think. And, you know, they're finding new ways to lose to Appalachian State. Now they've had enough. And the truth of the matter is we all know why they fired Jamie Christian. They fired Jamie Christian because they don't want to fire Trent Bray. They don't want to do it. Oregon State does not want to do it. They want to stay with Trent Bray. They know they owe him $3.6 million beyond this season. They know they can't afford to fire him. They know that there's probably some other staff changes they can make in the offseason. And so they're just trying to give the fan base something after the 0-6 start to the season. I want to hear from Beaver fans. How frustrated are you? Did you accept the firing of Jamie Christian as that's enough? Or do you want more? We'll talk to Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz, coming up. They've got their finger on the pulse of Oregon State's fan base. She'll be joining us. Later in the program, Mario Cristobal will be joining us. Former Oregon Ducks coach, head coach at Miami, coming off a big win this weekend. We'll dive into it at 4 o'clock with Cristobal on this program. And we'll lead you right into Monday Night Football, of course, as we always do on Mondays on this show during the NFL season. We'll talk some Mariners. They've evened their playoff series, their division series, one game apiece, headed to a pivotal game 3 taking place tomorrow. And we'll have that right here on 750 The Game. We'll carry that game live. So it'll be fun to see the Mariners break through. Mariners going to the World Series? I hope so. But first, we got to deal with Oregon State. We'll talk about the Ducks on the show. Ducks have a big one against the Hoosiers. But Oregon State, do they get it right? I think they do. I think the firing of Jamie Christian is the right move. The problem I'm having with it is how reactive it looks. It looks like this was done to appease the fan base. It looks very reactionary. It is not a proactive move. I am always looking at these schools and these coaching staffs and these athletic departments going, all right, who's really thinking? Because when you make a reactive move, it tells me that your eye is off the ball, that your eye and your ear is on the fan base and not the product itself. I think Scott Barnes, the AD, should just come out with it and say, hey, look, we are financially committed to Trent Bray long term. We just asked the state legislature for $10 million and got it. We're planning to go back to the state legislature and ask for more money. The optics here are not good to go and fire your football coach and pay a $3.6 million buyout. And so we really need this guy to work, and we need it to work out. Now, it may be that Oregon State's master plan is to try to convince Trent Bray to go back to being a defensive coordinator at the end of the season. It may be that. You don't have to reveal that. But maybe the proactive move that's going on behind the scenes is one of trying to orchestrate moving the pieces around and bringing in a head coach type that's more of a head coach type. I don't know, but I don't trust that Oregon State is thinking that deeply because I watched their handling of the Jamie Christian firing. It came weeks too late. It came almost in a reactionary way that's like, hey, the fans are really pissed. We got to give them something. And I think that Scott Barnes, the AD, that's what he did on Sunday is he offered up Jamie Christian and said, hey, you know, we're evaluating all areas of the program. Barnes' statement goes out at like 2 o'clock, and then 10 minutes later, here comes Trent Bray with, hey, we've evaluated the program. And our special teams coach has been sent packing. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. If you listen to this show and you read me at johnconzano.com, you knew what was coming. I wrote about this on Saturday night at johnconzano.com, and I said, Scott Barnes, the AD, plotting moves. I forecasted it on Sunday morning. The administrators at Oregon State are plotting. I have sources inside the athletic department, certainly, that told me things were afoot. And I know that I have my finger on the pulse of what is happening here. They don't want to move off Trent Bray. And if you are in the position where I tell you as an administrator, you can't afford to fire your head football coach. You have to hope that he wins some games this season and then deal with it at the end of the season, maybe. If you're in that position, you have to be far more reactive earlier. In week two, when you can't snap the football against Fresno State, you have to go and say, hey, special teams coach has got to go. This is unacceptable. You can't wait for more special teams problems in weeks 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then, the fans are pretty pissed. We got to give them something. Let's give them the special teams coach we should have given them in week 2. I want your phone calls. 503-417-7575 is the number. I want you to tell me where you stand on all of this. We will have Trent Bray on the program on Wednesday, as we always do. I will ask him about this short week, long week thing. I will ask him about potentially being spread too thin. It concerns me that they just seem to find new ways to lose football games. They lose from behind. They lose from ahead. They start flat. They get a field goal blocked. This is a team that has players on it that arguably could have 2 or 3 wins. Players have played well enough to win 2 or 3 games. The coaches have turned in an 0-6 performance this season. I'll take your phone calls on the subject. Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz, will be joining us. Steven, they look reactive. They look like they're just doing this to appease the fan base.
Yeah, it looks like they're trying to make a scapegoat, and that's Jamie Christian. And you're right. It should have been done after week 2. And we talked about that. We heard from a lot of fans. That's what it should have been. And that would have been the right move. But at this point, they're just trying to make a move to distract the fans from saying, look, we're 0-6. Like, why is this happening? And you know what? They didn't lose to App State because of special teams. So, like, it doesn't make sense to fire him after that game. You lost to Fresno State because of special teams. You fire him after that one. It is so reactive. And now I think, for me at least, John, like, as a guy watching this whole situation, watching it play out, how bad this whole season's been, I am now really focused on Trent Bray's press conference, which is not his strong suit. And I think that's the problem, is that, like, look, I need to hear him say certain things. I want to hear him say certain things now in his press conference. And that's definitely not what what he's known for. So it was another disappointing loss to App State, another game where you probably should have won the game, but you got down 17-0. You're fighting back, tooth and nail the entire time. And the other problem, John, is it's not just, I don't know if it's the players, but a lot of it seems like it's on coaching. Start of the second half, App State, 3rd and 18, 3rd and 19, they convert. Same drive, 3rd and 11, convert. Same exact drive, another 3rd and 11, they convert. I can't say that's all on the players. That has to be some on the coaching and the play calls and the discipline of knowing, like, look, it's 3rd and 19, we can't be giving up a run right up the middle for 18 yards to give it to a 4th and 1. If it's 3rd and 11, we can't be getting pass interference called. We can't have that happen in a close game like that against App State, who you are supposed to be more superior than. And that I put on coaching. I cannot put that on the players when they're making those type of mistakes week in and week out, especially to start the second half, man. That's on coaching.
They should have won the Fresno State game. They should have won the Houston game. They should have won the Appalachian State game. They have the ball on the 1 yard line with 2 minutes to go in the game. A touchdown gives you the lead and probably wins the game for you. And I'm waiting for the 6'5", 235-pound quarterback to take a snap under center and Oregon State to sneak it three times, get it into the end zone. Instead, they are snapping the ball to Anthony Hankerson 5 yards deep in the backfield in a direct snap. And he, for the first two plays, gets stuffed at the line of scrimmage. And on the third one, he gave up on his line. I watched that third play three times. I slowed it down to say, what was Hankerson seeing? I think he gave up on the ability for his offensive line to get, you know, a yard of push into the end zone. I think if he stays behind his right guard, I think Hankerson gets into the end zone. Instead, he tried to veer out to the right. He runs into a defender. They drop him for a loss, and it's ball game. And, you know, I put that on the offensive coordinator. I think Ryan Gunderson needs to do a better job there. Like, what are we thinking? What are you thinking in that situation?
I'll say this. Bray addressed this at the press conference. I have the quote here. I'll play. This is what Trey Bray, they asked him about the goal line calls.
So the defense of the play call is Malik can't get under center. So we can't run sneak with him. The defense of the play calling is we got 1 yard to go. We've got more numbers than they do. We should be able to get 1 yard on that play for sure. Like that is our best 1 yard play. So you call your best 1 yard play when you're in those moments. And, so that you watch when you go back and watch the film, like we got more hats, we should win.
Does that change it? That Malik Murphy can't get under center?
If Malik can't get under center, get your backup quarterback in that goal line short yardage situation.
But they tried that against Houston and they got stuffed too.
I'm not snapping the ball 3-4 yards deep into the backfield and then saying, all right, we're going to start from back here. You're doing the defense a favor in that situation. Have you watched the Philadelphia Eagles play this season, coach? Have you seen them play in the last 5 years? Like, do you not have a tush push situation? You can't tell me that that's their best play. And when you strike out on second down and you strike out on third down, I have a real problem with you calling it on fourth down.
That's my problem, is that they called the same exact thing where they motioned Murphy out of there. At least have Malik Murphy take the snap, because that would confuse the defense a little bit. The defense knew the ball's going to Hankerson. He's taking the snap. It's the same exact play call. I mean, there is no confusion, no changeup at all. If anything, have Murphy take the snap and at least hand it off to him. It's a little different.
Are they saying Murphy can't get under center because of his hand injury? Okay, that's fine. Get him out of the game. Get a quarterback in there that can get under center and take a snap. I mean, I don't love it. And if you're aware of that, you know, and you're concerned about getting a yard, I'm not opposed to a play action on second down or third down. You know, little short pass play, whatever. Have them throw it away if it's not there. But just so many mistakes. And on Malik Murphy, $1.5 million. $1.5 million in NIL money for Malik Murphy. He has a pretty good statistical game. But what in the world is he doing earlier in the second half, playing three flies up in the end zone, just throwing the ball up for grabs like he's in the parking lot at a tailgate in a situation where he needs to throw the ball away? And you say they don't lose it on special teams. I would argue if you can kick a 28-yard field goal earlier in the game,
that's true.
We are talking about on fourth down kicking another field goal to win the game.
That's very true. You know, I didn't take that into account. That it's like, yeah, they know they can't snap it. They know they can't hold it. They know they can't kick it, and that is a big deal. But yeah, I mean,
it's a simple game.
It's a very simple game, and it seems like right now Oregon State
is a simple game.
They're making it way too complicated. And you know, Malik Murphy has to be better in those situations. He can't be throwing up the ball. The defense has to be better. Everyone has to be better. I mean, App State is they're an average Sun Belt team this season, and you just lost. You got pushed around.
What's the worst loss? What's the worst loss for Oregon State this season? Like if you rank it, like which one's the worst?
The Fresno one, because the special teams play was so embarrassing. You were the laughing stock of college football, and then Bray at the halftime with Nigel Burton, like that brought the most showcase to it.
Fresno's probably the most embarrassing one, but I think the most painful one was the Houston loss, because they had played so well. And they had a Big 12 team that had a decent record beat. And that was going to be a pivot point. I actually think if you win the Fresno State game or you win the Houston game, I actually think this team does a better job closing out it, you know, as the season progresses. I think they might win the Appalachian State game. I wonder about the belief that this team doesn't have in itself. You know, you talk about Anthony Robbins, like, you know, in these speakers. Like, I remember during the pandemic, we kept bringing on, like, John Maxwell and, we, you know, Greg Bell and, you know, Water the Bamboo and the Energy Bus. And we were bringing on all these self-help authors. I was reaching out to Tony Robbins. Can we get him on the show and have him talk to people about, you know, staying positive through the pandemic. If I'm Trent Bray right now, you might consider taking some of your practice time and dedicating it to special teams, of course. Snap the ball, kick the ball. Can you do these things? Can you block on a field goal? Can you block on an extra point? And then I might consider bringing in like some self-help gurus, you know, have them close their eyes. It reminds me like, you know, when The Natural, when Robert Redford and Roy Hobbs in The Natural, they have that scene where they've lost a bunch of games and they bring in like the sports psychologist and he's like, the boat is rocking in an ocean. You know, like Oregon State right now is looking for a port in the storm. They need some semblance of progress. I want phone calls. 503-417-7575. Let's go to the phone lines. Gene, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Well, I'm listening, and you don't say this lightly because you're not that way. Oregon State should have probably won three games other than just stupid special team mistakes. And I don't know, and why I called in was, this special teams coach, there's a reason they hired him. What's his history, John? I can't listen to the show every day, all day long, but what's his history? Where's he from, and what are his credentials?
Yeah, he had some prior success as a special teams coach at other stops, so it wasn't like he wasn't qualified, but there is a reason why Trent Bray brought Jamie Christian in. Like, Jamie Christian is the son-in-law of Dennis Erickson. So there is some loyalty there. Trent Bray played for Dennis Erickson. His father coached with Dennis Erickson. But when you look at Jamie Christian, you know, this is a guy who, was appointed the special teams coordinator just this last year. So he was with the team last year. Prior to that, he was at New Mexico, where they were fine. Prior to that, he was at Fresno State, where they were fine. Prior to that, he was a running backs coach at UNLV. They were fine there. And at Houston, he was the special teams coordinator. Generally the special teams position is a low level assistant. And the problem I'm having is, I think Trent Bray knows football. I think he's fine. I'm not supporting Trent Bray saying this guy's going to be a great head coach. I don't know if he can be a head coach 2 years from now. I don't know if he can be a head coach 3 years from now. But what Oregon State needs from him is they need like 18 months out of him before they can cut him loose, because they can't afford to fire him now. And one of the problems that I've seen, one of the real weaknesses, and I want to talk about little things and how little things begat big things on this show today. You have to do the little things right. In baseball, and I played college baseball, and I grew up in a baseball household. My dad was a professional baseball player. You know what we stressed? Hit the cutoff, man. Make the right play. Know the situation. How many outs there are. It's the little things in baseball that end up being big things. It's the little things in football. Are you blocking? Can you tackle? Can you snap the ball from under center? And if you can't, is that the right quarterback to have in the game on the goal line? It is little things. And I worry about Trent Bray being a head coach because he doesn't do the little things right. Like, he doesn't come on and do the interviews that he does on this show weekly. He doesn't do a great job with them. He's not polished that way. There are some concerns. Andrew Nemec, who does a great job covering recruiting, has been out on social media saying, hey, they've been dropping the ball in recruiting. The fact that he took over the defense from Keith Hayward a year ago, he said, okay, I'm going to handle the defense myself. I'm the head coach, micromanaging the defense. It's just these little things that kind of add up and go, okay, wait a minute, this guy might not be a head coach. Problem Oregon State has is they're stuck with him, and they owe him $3.6 million if they fire him right now. So now they're kind of stuck with him. And in the end, if you fire him, you're not Alabama, you're not Oregon, you don't have unlimited resources. $3.6 million is a lot of money for you if you're Oregon State. So you have to kind of go, okay, how do we make this work? How do we get through this season? And then do we address it in the offseason and get him to accept a demotion or accept a buyout of some kind? Deal with that later. But it is a predicament that Oregon State is stuck in right now. Let's go to Roy in Portland. Roy, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, John?
I'm well.
If I'm Oregon, I'm getting on a plane, and I'm going to California, and I'm going to get Brian Harsin. Brian Harsin will take the job. Mm. You know, he was the Boise State. Yep. He knows how to coach one on a small budget. He knows how to recruit in this part of the country.
Not bad.
I believe he would definitely take the job. Brian Harsin's a great coach. He got a raw deal at Auburn. Before he went to Auburn, he was tearing it up at Boise State. I said, you get down there and you talk to him and see what it would take to get him to be the head coach of Oregon State.
Yeah, it's not a bad call, Roy. No charge for the consulting fee, right?
Yeah, I'm just, John. I'm just a college football fan, man. You know what? It's not working with Bray, man. Yeah. Sometimes you can be your dream job, but you're just not ready, man.
Yeah, or he might not be like Mark Helfrich. Maybe he's just not a head coach.
I mean, yeah, he's not. When you're going 0-6 and you might not win a game, you have to make a change. Yeah, I mean you can't bring him back.
They got to find a way to convince him. They got to make it his idea, Roy, where they got to convince him. It's one of these things where you got to make it his idea. Hey, you know what? Wouldn't it be better if you were just the coordinator?
Could they pull off a Harsin or a Rolovich over at Cal?
Maybe. I mean, but here's the other thing. I heard people saying, you know, they should go after Jason Eck at New Mexico.
He's Eck's too good for that.
He's not going to take that job.
No.
He can do better.
He'll take the UCLA job.
It's not a great job. And people keep talking about, you know, Eric Morris at North Texas. He's not going to take that job. He can do better, too. And so part of the reason why I think it's twofold why they can't fire Bray right now is it's the $3.6 million. Plus, you're not just firing the head coach. You're firing the D coordinator. So you have a real staffing problem in getting rid of Trent Bray. And I think, you know, that is the conundrum. And that's why after week one, week two, people were calling for Bray's head. I'm like, you don't really understand the dynamic. They're not going to fire him. They're just not going to do it. Cam is in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Cam, go ahead.
Hey, John, you said the name I was thinking about, Mark Helfrich. You know, Gunderson has been the offensive coordinator there at Oregon State under Trent Bray. And now that the special teams coordinator is out of the way, we can move on to the next problem. He was not effective with Dante Moore as his quarterback. He was not effective with Chip Kelly helping him run the offense down in UCLA. And if you look at the money versus the production that Oregon State's paying out, you know, they may not have the biggest wallet in NIL, but they're paying more per yard than anybody else. You have to look at Gunderson. Real quick question for you for the Ducks. They're going to play two games in a row that are hosted by College Game Day. Are they the first team in college football to do that? And if not, who was? And if they are the first team, how long before the SEC fans complain that it wasn't one of them?
Yeah, you're going to get that. And by the way, I think Game Day would have gone to Texas, Oklahoma, had Texas not face planted. Mario Cristobal coming up at 4 o'clock. Angie Machado is next. She's going to weigh in on the Oregon State front. Leave it here.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
You know, a subject that comes up frequently on the show, I almost think they should be a... It comes up so frequently, they should be a sponsor of the show. It's Costco. I enjoy the Costco. I like the Costco experience. Now, there's things with the Costco experience, like humanity, that drive me bonkers. People drive me crazy. Steven, you worked at Costco. What was that like?
It is wild, a wild place, especially if you go like on a Saturday or Sunday and you're working there. It is a zoo. It is a bunch of animals just running around getting stuff. And then we talk
animals.
Yeah. And then you talked about the rain. When it rains at Costco, the parking lot is absolutely insane. And you have to have your head on a swivel. It is a wild place.
It is this bouillabaisse of humanity. Right out of that soup is Angie Machado, beaverblitz.com. She is the owner. She is the publisher. She is the operator. She went to Costco today because when I texted her and said, hey, I need you on the show, she said, I'm in Costco. What was the Costco like? Give us your scouting report.
I love Costco. I always need stuff. So, I mean, when you have a family, you got to go. And yeah, but hey, John, you saved me so much money because I like got in and got out and did not look around.
All right.
So
you didn't buy.
It was busy.
Yeah. What did you make an impulse buy or did you stay to the list?
So I'm not a list person at all. And then I always get home and be like, oh crap, I totally forgot something. But I did. I mean, I have a 17-year-old son and a husband. So it's all the grass-fed chomp sticks, grass-fed beef, chicken. We have graduated from Dino Nuggets now. And now it's the Bear Nugget. And they had their little chocolate advent calendar. So Both boys, both my sons said they didn't want them, but I always get one for my parents, and they like to share the little chocolate advent calendar. So that was my only off the grid. I did not buy myself any clothes because I have reached old age now where I will like, oh, that's a sweet deal on that sweater. I might as well just buy it.
Yeah. What kind of seasonal attire do they have out at the Costco now? Is it like raincoats or are they on to spring or what? No, you didn't look.
I was like, I got to get like moving so that I'm not in the middle of Costco when John Canzano calls.
I love it. Angie Machado, Beaver Blitz with us. All right. We've been talking about Trent Bray. We've been talking about the reactive move from Scott Barnes, the firing of Jamie Christian. How is that going over with your followers and your readers?
Yeah, I mean, our fans are, you know, they're pretty dialed in. Most of them thought that was way too late, the Jamie Christian info. There's a lot that thinks that there needs to be some more movement in the coaching staff. I wrote my column today. I do a Saturday or a Monday morning column called That's What She Said. Kind of, it's usually about football. It's Monday morning football. I do have an overall section, and I actually think it's bigger than Trent Bray at this point. I think it's an entire department that's broken. And so that's kind of been the discussion today in the lodge.
Yeah, and I think I love that. That's What She Said is perfect. I love that. So are we talking about Scott Barnes? I mean, without talking about Scott Barnes.
There's Barnes, there's Blaylock. You know, I know you talked to him. I talked to him on Friday. This whole Blueprint Sports stuff. I just think communication's been bad all along. There's been a lot of drop balls. So it's been a major contentious point in the lodge at Beaver Blitz.
I think that Scott Barnes has been busy. I want to give him that benefit of the doubt, but I didn't like the move either because it's so reactive and it was so. I mean, to me, it's pandering to the fan base. You're almost being gratuitous and saying, okay, we'll fire the special teams coach. Is that good enough? How do you weigh Barnes being busy with the Pac-12 rebuild and Barnes maybe getting his eye off the ball at Oregon State? Is that a factor in your mind?
I think so. I mean, yeah, I'm not saying he hasn't had a lot on his plate. There's a lot going on, kind of outside of, football and basketball, but he does football and basketball right now are winning at under a 40, right around a 40% clip. Those are your two revenue sports. That's not going to get it done in this new era of the Pac-12. I think what really bothered people too is, and this is going back, but Oregon State gets a new president back against the wall and you work yourself a pay raise. That's, that hasn't set well with the longtime, fans as well. So lots and lots. Like I said, it's a lot deeper for Oregon State fans than just Coach Bray and football. But, and I felt Barnes has been kind of MIA this whole football season. So, not that he can say a lot. I mean, fans, I think, can be overreactive at times. And, that statement was vanilla and he can't come out pitchforks and, fire and brimstone. But, I think a lot of fans just feel a little too little too late right now.
Oregon State has got these games with Wake Forest and Lafayette and Tulsa and two games with Washington State. And there's some chances to win. Is anything good enough? I mean, if they win four down the stretch, is that good enough for people to be like, okay, wait a minute, we see something? Or has the damage been done in your mind, Angie?
Yeah, I think the damage is done in a lot of ways. Because those wins aren't going to move the needle. Wake Forest, I think Washington State will kind of, but this is a team I think with, and there's talent. The people that say that, oh, well, there's no talent and all the, that's not true. There is plenty of talent on this team. This team with really good coaching, I think could be at four wins easily right now with really like solid coaching. I think with mediocre coaching, this team's a 3-win team. So, you can't put all this on the players. I know Coach Bray has said over and over, players, have to execute. And it reminds me back to the Gary Anderson, players make plays. They all have their little buzzwords for it. But at the end of the day, as a teacher, as a coach, mentor, whatever you're doing in life, if what you're teaching isn't getting through the right way to the your students or your you have to change up how you're doing it because there's a disconnect at some level.
I am talking with Angie Machado, BeaverBlitz.com. This $3.6 million that they owe Trent Bray's problem. Do you get the sense that they could talk to Bray at the end of the year and convince him it's his idea to take a demotion back to D coordinator, go out and hire a Paul Christ and start over? I mean, is that out there as a possibility, or what do you see in Trent Bray's eyes when you talk with him?
You know, I do think, I mean, I think Trent Bray still wants to win, and I think he feels that he can. There's that competitiveness in him. I also know he loves Oregon State. This is why he's here doing what he's doing right now. So, you know, he could be in East Lansing with Jonathan Smith as a DC. So, could that happen? Possibly. You know, it's interesting. You know, there's Bill Orem's tried to get him on the hot mic a few times of, you know, do you like being a head coach? And I mean, he's in it. He's competitive. It's just a matter of, you know, like I said, end of the day, I think Trent Bray loves Oregon State and he will do what's best for Oregon State.
I think that's the possibility. I just don't know. Does Barnes have the charm to do that, to convince Bray this is his idea? Go back to being a D coordinator. Your life will be better. We shall see. And then what kind of head coach would take, you know, the former head coach being on his staff? It gets kind of messy and
it gets
tricky.
Well, I don't know if Trent would, right? I mean, if I'm Trent Bray, I don't want to stay here as the DC. I mean, then I would look for something else. But I think then the deeper issue is, do you trust Scott Barnes to make the next hire? I mean, I think Beaver fans, I think boosters are in that position of, okay, it's time to nuke the whole thing because this is not working.
Angie Machado with us, Beaver Blitz. I don't know if they can afford it. I look at Barnes' contract. It's a big number. I look at Bray's contract. It's a big number. I look at the financial position they're in, and I'm going, okay, how do they get out of this? And it looks a little dire to me. Further, you've got Wayne Tinkle, the men's basketball coach, in a similar predicament with Barnes. I mean, as we look at Scott Barnes, how much credit do we give him? Do you give him Jonathan Smith? I probably do. But, Wayne Tinkle and Trent Bray, those don't look like home runs.
No, exactly. I mean, and Jonathan Smith was really, he lucked out there. I mean, that was another unknown commodity. He went for the, you know, local boy comes home. That worked out. Jonathan did have a bad hire in Tim Tibisar, too, that he had to navigate. And so, Coach Bray, I want to give Trent Bray, I think he deserves some leeway, right? A first-time head coach, I don't necessarily like the fact that he went out and got first-time DC and OC and Gunderson and Hayward. Hayward I could handle because you have Trent Bray as total defensive mind. Having a rookie OC in with a rookie head coach, I think is tough. So I do give him some leeway. But as I said last week in my She Said article, this is the part every head coach I've ever spoken with says the worst part of their job is the personnel side. And this is where Trent Bray needs to step up and be CEO, Trent Bray. So he did part ways with Jamie Christian. I think it was too late. But at the end of the year or whenever he decides to look through this staff and this roster, that is going to be a big question is if he stays on board, what changes is he willing to make? You know, and again, you talk about the money. Scott Barnes was the one that gave Wayne Tinkle the huge salary and the huge extension. Scott Barnes gave himself or talked President Murphy into giving him a contract and a salary that's over twice what his Mountain West new Pac-12 peers are making. Those kind of things are what don't sit well with Beaver Nation.
I like for him to negotiate other deals like he negotiated for himself. Like, you know, I always said that about Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner. Why can't he do that for the Pac-12? He's pretty shrewd.
Exactly. You know I get it. I get you want to take care of yourself. You're trying to manage the dismantling of an entire conference. Although Beaver fans do, I mean, and fair or not, feel that he should have, when USC and UCLA bolted, he should have been shopping for a landing spot for, you know, the potential for them to fall apart. But Oregon State, Washington State were not desirable, TV markets or anything else. But that doesn't sell well, though. You're seeing all this financial burden, this hardships coming, and then you find yourself and you talk the new president, who is a rookie president in her own right, and you say, "Hey, I need to make this much more money." She's worried you're going to bolt to Washington, whether that was a real possibility or not, we don't know, and gets a big raise. And now you're still in this dire straits with a department and you're making a nice big salary. Like I said, Beaver fans, that is their big talking point. And this is what has fired them up in the Lodge of Beaver Blitz.
I also think it doesn't help that UCLA goes and beats Penn State with an interim coach and a new play caller. It makes people start rubbernecking going, wait a minute, why doesn't Oregon State do something about it? Simple answer is I think they would if they had more money. But you tell me, Angie, donors, fans, what is Research Stadium going to look like when Oregon State comes back for a home game?
It's not going to be pretty this weekend. I don't see, I mean, students hopefully will show up. I mean, that's what you hope. But, the game last Friday against Houston was pretty dismal, you know, attendance wise, except for the students. I think this one's going to be even worse for Wake Forest. So that's at the end of the day, I never like saying, you know, people, you know, should be fired, or I hate that whole, but the worst right now, Scott Barnes should be happy that fans are ticked off and angry, because the next step is when they become apathetic, and when they become apathetic and when this, you know, diehard fan base becomes apathetic, then you're in real trouble.
Angie, did you get the $1.50 hot dog and soda on your way out of Costco?
I don't like hot dogs. I hate hot dogs. And I'm on like this whole workout trying to get in shape deal. So yeah, I bought, I got a bunch of like healthy stuff.
All right. That's okay. That's all right. I'm glad you got out of there with no damage. I appreciate you making time for us.
I wouldn't say that. It wasn't no damage, but it was minimal. My husband will be happy.
All right. We'll see you in the press box. Beaverblitz.com if you want to read Angie Machado. Thanks, Angie.
Thanks, John.
All right, there she goes, fresh out of. She got out of there, Steven. You're not a hot dog guy either, and you worked there.
Well, that's the thing is I was a hot dog guy, and then I had too many hot dogs. That was my problem. Because when I was working there, John, I was a college student. So, you know, I first started in the summertime. So it's like, I'm trying to save a buck. You know, $1.50 for a dog and a soda? That's a perfect lunch for, you know, a college kid working a job. So that
Did you only eat one, or what was your record?
Yeah, I'd only go one. And then I got really, you know, I just can't eat them anymore. You get those Costco burps, the Costco dog burps, and then it's all bad downhill from there.
There you go. Well, all right, so what's the peeve of workers? Like, you know, if you're dealing with people coming through the checkout line, or people inside the warehouse, what would workers say is their biggest peeve?
I would say just snottiness, because there's a lot of people that go to Costco, and since they pay for the membership, they expect, like, they treat you like you are lesser than, since you're working there, and, like, you have to, you know, wait on them hand and fist, and that's not how it works.
Because I have a membership.
Right.
I'm like country club membership.
Yeah, I pay
Bay
a membership.
Club. Oh, yeah. I'm the Bay Club. I'm a member at the Bay Club.
You are the help. You are the help. Do exactly what I say right now.
Yeah. Well, get that cardboard box. Put my stuff in it. You know?
And do it quickly.
My peeve is when they don't use a box, and then I get to the car and I just got a bunch of things rolling around in the back of the car. Like, I got a ham back there rolling around with canned goods.
See, I know how important the boxes are at Costco. It's like currency. It's literally like cash. Like, if you have a good box run, you're on fire for the day. So I don't take their boxes because I know how important it is to them. You also need to have hookups. Like, you need to get friends with the produce guy. You need to be friends with the bakery guys. Like, it's huge.
I'm friends with the guys in the meat department.
Well, but I'm talking for boxes though, because they box all those things and then they just leave the boxes. You get a guy, you have a guy back there, they'll bring him up right to your register for you.
There are some advantages to being the sports radio guy and columnist, and one of them is that the Costco meat department guys are sports fans. And so I've had a couple times, Steven, where I've been in there and I've been looking for crab legs, or I've been looking for something else, and they'll come out and they'll say, "What do you need?" And I'll be like, "I was looking for this." And they'll go in the back and they'll come out with exactly what I need. Like, it's all stashed back there. Like, it's Wonkaville back there for meat. So I like that. Are you looking for a rump roast? Just tell them you listen to the BFT. They'll take care of you. All right, leave it here. Our big splash coming up. And guess what? Mario Cristobal at 4:00.
To the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
How much credit should Mario Cristobal get for the success that Oregon is enjoying now? We're going to talk about that in hour two of the show. Cristobal himself will be joining us at 4:00 and ask him about his regrets looking back at Oregon, what he thinks he accomplished, what he didn't accomplish. We'll talk about it with Cristobal coming up. Plus, has the job of a coach changed in 2025? I'm focused on whether or not Oregon State needs a general manager. Oregon State AD Scott Barnes saying, "No, we'll evaluate it at the end of the year." I'm like, how could you say that? You need a player personnel person. I'll ask Mario Cristobal about that. Yes, I know he has a bigger, much bigger budget at Miami than Oregon State does, but Oregon's got GM and everybody else has a GM. Like, you need a GM. You need somebody who's going to tell the coaches, no, this is the money you have to spend. You have to allocate it this way or that way. Somebody who knows the market, somebody who wants to deal with the parents and the agents and the players. who isn't a coach? Do you think Trent Bray needs more on his plate?
Who wants that job? At a school like Oregon State, where you don't have unlimited funds, or you're not, you know, you don't have a bunch of funds coming in, like, you have to really, I mean, that's the definition of Moneyball right there. Like, that's hard to do.
I would go and find one of those MIT kids who's counting cards somewhere in a casino. I would bring down the house. Yeah, you know, I would do what, you know, Theo Epstein. Find the next Theo Epstein and tell him, hey, you know, we're going to put you in charge at Oregon State. All of this brings us to the big splash. The Mariners trying to get to a World Series.
This is
the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be
the big splash.
Well, they're down one zip in the American League Divisional Series, and the Seattle Mariners leaned on their guys, Cal Rowley, Julio Rodriguez.
Hard hit ball by Rowley. Down the right field line towards the corner. And the big dumper is looking for extra bases. And he's got a double.
There it was. Mariners go on to win game two, evening up their series against the Detroit Tigers. Tigers-Mariners game three scheduled for tomorrow. We'll have the action right here on 750 The Game. Tigers hosting, trying to get to the World Series themselves. Mariners, of course, evening up that series. Certainly, I think, you know, the Tigers were in this position a year ago when the Guardians took the series in five before losing to the Yankees. But Mariners, this is a big one, Stephen. The pivotal game three, although they all matter the same, game three feels bigger.
Yeah, no, and, you know, good job by the Mariners because they lose that game one in a game where you needed to win that one because in game two, the Tigers throw out Tarik Skubal, you know, the best pitcher on the planet. And you're thinking, man, this is a tough spot for the Mariners to come in, lose game one. Now you're going against Skubal, who, you know, is the Cy Young from last year, might win the Cy Young this year. And you got to win that game, and they go out and they do it. And you know, they got to him a little bit. Jorge Polanco hit two homers off him. Just incredible stuff there. And, you know, right there, Cal Rowley, Julio Rodriguez, your stars. Those are the guys that you're building your roster around, build your franchise around. They come through in the eighth inning right there, back-to-back doubles. Just a nice win, a fun win for the Mariners fans. It was funny to look at some of the crowd out there. You know, there's a dude crying out there because the Mariners haven't won a playoff game since, 2001, I believe, at home. It's been almost 25 years. So, you know, cool for that moment. But, yeah, now you got a game three. You got to go into Detroit where kind of a tough place to play. You know, those fans get a little bit rowdy as well. And the Tigers, they were in the playoffs last season. So, this is a good one. I think this is going to be one of the better series going on. And you know, Mariners got to get the one, got to get one, got to get that split.
One inning at a time, one pitch at a time.
That's right.
You know, you can't let, you know, oh, we need to win three of these. You can't get that mindset. Now, the other thing in Seattle, it was a big sports weekend. The Mariners drew 94,661 fans for the two playoff games at T-Mobile Park. Lumen Field had 32,913 for the Sounders game on Saturday. And then another 68,804 for the Seahawks game on Sunday. 200,000 fans. Now, it could be that some people went to all three games. Can I get an amen? But this was like, hey, what a great sports weekend in Seattle. And to your point, Stephen, this stuff matters. The Mariners fans have toiled like Blazer fans have toiled with their organization. And they're just dying for a breakthrough. And I don't know why, when you said the fan was crying, it reminded me of that World Cup clip where the U.S. fan was crying after they lost to Ghana. Remember that?
It's the World Cup. It's the World Cup, bro. We had a chance. We had a chance. The second year we lost to Ghana. The second year. Why do we always give up the goal in the last minute? If you don't watch soccer, this is what it means to us. This is what it means to us. We should have won this game.
Should have won the game. But the Mariners did break through.
I mean, it's cool. Me and my brother were talking about that. How cool of a day that could be for the Mariner or for Seattle, just market. Yeah. Like, go into the Seahawks game and then just walk across the street over to T-Mobile Park. Like, how cool would that have been? Like, if you are a diehard Seattle fan, just what day would that be?
I have a question
they lost,
for you now.
No, they lost the Seahawks game.
First baseman Josh Naylor did not travel with the team ahead of Game 3, causing some questions in Seattle. Dan Wilson, the manager, told reporters today in Detroit that Naylor was not there. People may know that he and his wife are expecting the birth of their first child. The due date was Saturday. I don't know if something happened here or if he's trying to be there. They're saying it's a personal matter, a personal day. He'll be back. We're looking forward to it. He was expected to go on paternity leave at some point during the series. The Mariners say they have a plan, you know. He's 0-for-8 in the series, so maybe it's a good time for a day off. I don't know. But are you okay if he misses Game 3 to see the birth of his child?
I mean, the human in me says yeah, but the competitor in me says, man, if I'm him, I'm probably playing.
What do you do?
I probably play.
I think you have a professional obligation to play. But
is it the first child?
Yes. Can we induce labor? Like, come on. Is a day off today? Can we, you know, congratulations.
Come on, honey, get this thing done. No.
Baby is here. And then you fly him in and let him, you know, he's at the plate for his team.
I can't blame him, but I think I would play.
I think I would not play. I would, but my move, that would be my public stance. And then privately, I'd be like, hey, can we induce this? Can I get there? Leave it here.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
You can debate what the biggest victory of the college football weekend was. I would offer that Miami's win over Florida State on Saturday night was right up in there. Mario Cristobal on the sideline looking as intense as always. And I reached out to Cristobal after the victory. He was kind enough to do an interview on the show, joining us from South Florida, sunny South Florida. Mario Cristobal, thanks for making time.
How are you, bro?
I'm doing good. All right, hey, great win Saturday night. You looked intense on the sideline. I know that's a rivalry game that means a lot to you guys. What'd that feel like for you?
Well, you know, the last time I had a chance to play there was 1991, like the original wide right one.
Yeah.
And so I was a GA there for one stop and then as a head coach there for another stop. But I hadn't had a chance to win there since that day. And it's just a really intense, physical, violent rivalry. And it was great to come out and really get after it and find a way to get the W.
You guys are humming. You've got talent. You look like everything that you talked about, you know, when you were introduced there as the coach and everything you wanted to do, it feels like it's coming into place for you. Can you afford to look at it from that perspective, or is it always about what can you do next to get better?
Yeah, I don't, you know, we're not there yet. I mean, you know, upon arrival, it was gut-wrenching the amount of work that had to be done, how much it had fallen off in every aspect, players, culture, caliber of people and competitor. And but we've worked relentlessly. I mean, we've brought in some great people at all levels of the program, and we've made a lot of progress. But the neat thing is, you know, every Saturday, as we get better, we certainly identify there's so many areas that we got to work on, improve upon, and there's a strong appetite for it. So, you know, wake up and get right at it again.
Give us an idea, because, you know, you remember the old world Pac-12. Compare ACC football to the old Pac-12.
See, I'll go to the grave saying that the Pac-12 was awesome. And I wish there was a way that it could have survived. I mean, I thought that whole, the entire contingent, that whole pocket of football was strong and getting better. And, you know, business is what it is. And football, you know, takes its course and its path, and it's led to all these realignments and whatnot. But I just think, you know, the ACC continues to get stronger. You know, some coaches have been hired that have brought in top tier talent, some really unique schemes as well, which reminds me a lot of some of the stuff in the Pac-12 and the SEC during my time there. So all in all, it just our conference keeps getting stronger and stronger. And it's kind of neat to see all the things that are playing out in college football on a week-by-week basis.
We all remember watching Rocco and Mateo in the back of the press box throwing the football remember you talking about them on this show, shooting their Nerf guns at each other on Christmas morning and all that. How are the kids?
You know what? It's kind of neat. It's they're playing football at the high school I went to. And ironically, there's not a single skilled player in our bloodlines, and they become wide receivers. So
I love it.
A total shot. Yeah, it's a shot to the gut for me. You know, they're out there running routes and they're developing, and they're really, you know, they've really adjusted and acclimated well. So super blessed, man. They are. I appreciate you asking about them. They're doing really well.
The best blocking wide receivers in high school, Miami area high school. That has to be your wife's genetics there, the wide receiver part.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's the athletic side. I'm, you know, this side's more plotters and, you know, big dudes. But you know what? He knows every time he comes home, he's going to be asked about how he blocked, and then we have to watch it off the film.
Because
he's not allowed to get the football unless he blocks well.
All right. Your old offensive line coach, since you're talking about your old playing days, used a part of a Robert Frost poem to motivate you guys. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep and miles to go before I sleep. That's Robert Frost from back in the day. But you had a coach who used to say that to you every day.
Yeah, Arthur Francis Kehoe, man. Coach Kehoe was the best. And, you know, we had a block of really, really stout defensive line in practice every day. It was Cortez Kennedy. It was Russell Maryland, Bill Hawkins, Greg Mark. These guys are all, you know, first, second rounders, Hall of Famers and whatnot. And if we'd had success a little bit against them, or if we came off a game where we felt like we made progress, that dude would just march up and down right beside us. It's telling we have miles to go before we sleep, miles to go and promises to keep. And he was, he quoted a lot of different, you know, things and whatnot to keep us motivated. And that was one that was always a staple for him.
You did well at Oregon, obviously 35-13, Rose Bowl win, Red Box win, you know, 12 win season, a 10 win season. And then you leave for Miami. What were you proud of, most proud of, as you look back at your time at Oregon?
You know, it just, they just be part of an unbelievable place and tradition, of an opportunity granted and one that, you know, hopefully could be always looked upon as when we got there. I remember arriving as an assistant where it was raining sideways on a, on a crazy night on January and being rushed over to watch a basketball game where the basketball at halftime, they were going to have the players play against the new coaching staff. And those guys weren't happy because, right, they were just been a 4-8 season. And the staff had a staff that had been ultra successful. There was change coming. And then watching Justin Herbert dunk over Coach Taggart, you know, like live in the middle of Matthew Knight Arena. It was surreal. But I just thought the way that, we were able to work really hard with awesome people, a bunch of people coming together, and finding a way to, you know, in our second year, you know, go and win the Rose Bowl and win a conference title and go on a nice run and change the recruiting platform and, trajectory and, you know, just be part of a great program, and leaving it in a better place than when we arrived.
I look at what happened, everything that happened, and, you know, Taggart leaves and then you end up in charge. And then really it's your stepping stone back to your alma mater. You mentioned Herbert. When did you know that Herbert was Justin Herbert? How long did it take you to figure that out?
No, that was early right away. But, you know, quite honestly, John, I never ever thought of anything as a stepping stone and never ever had any plans of anything, but it's just the one thing that no one ever knows is what goes on in these frantic, crazy time crunch moments of when moves are made, decisions have to be made. There's no, you know, and, you know, at the end of the day, it always works out best for everybody, right? What's meant to be, it's meant to be. And had some time there with Justin Herbert, and it was, no, I mean, it's just he's a creature. I mean, he's 6'6" and he was making throws in practice and running the ball in practice. I'd never seen something like that, never. And but we had to fortify. You know, Coach Greenwood had done a great job recruiting some great young offensive linemen. But we need a couple more pieces, and the Panays and those guys, you know, came on in. It was like the perfect storm, like the perfect marriage of pieces, and it led to a pretty quick you know, a pretty quick rising of the program.
I think if Miami doesn't call, you stay at Oregon. That was always my thing, that I thought you can't turn your back on going home. And I think everyone understands that ultimately. And you put in, what, 4+ years at Oregon. But am I getting that right? Like, if, you know, in this world, it feels like Miami, Oregon, there's a few schools out there. These are really good jobs.
Well, you know, it's like I always think about, like, who goes back and does something for their alma mater, did so much for them, you know, right? Like, there's, you have one of the best examples right there, of course, and Phil Knight. And when someone at my level, like in life, there's, in terms of gratitude, what's the best possible thing I could do to show my gratitude for a place I gave a couple of kids, my brother and I, the sons of a couple of, you know, I'm a, you know, immigrant, dad, political, you know, deal from Cuba. Like, Miami gave us everything. Like, it did everything for us, and Miami had fallen. And Miami had fallen hard and was not looking to, you know, work its way up anytime soon. And so I owe, you know, and I believe in that. And I believe in repaying. And that's what I always wanted. I wanted to make sure that if we never plan to leave, but if we plan to leave, that we certainly left it in a better spot than how we came in, and that I was going to go and repay the debt that I felt that I owed.
Mario Cristobal with us, Miami head football coach. They are number 2 in the latest AP poll. Oregon's at 3. I want to see you guys play. I want to see Oregon, Miami in a CFP. Can we get a semifinal or a championship matchup? Maybe. We'll see. That's way down the road, isn't it?
Well, what I think is that there's absolutely no value talking about rankings and ratings at this point. I mean, humility is always 1 week away, and you see it every single, right?
That's
you
right.
See it every single week. I mean, you know that last week, John, there were 24 one-possession games, and there were six overtime games. It's because conference play is now real, and every single week is playoff football. So to even spend a fraction of a second, you know, looking at a ranking or a poll is the biggest waste of time imaginable. So, you know, press on week by week, one day at a time.
Has this job gotten harder with the way it is with, you know, NIL and the portal? And it doesn't feel like there's ever a day off or a week off for a head coach.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm a boring human being anyways. I wouldn't know what else to do. So
it's true.
I mean, there are challenges, but, you know, I think universities are adapting, and, you know, there's the old saying, man, adapt or die, right? You got to be able to press on and go, and some people have and some haven't, and some are in better position than others, and then some are coming on strong. No, but everybody recognizes that you have to keep up, and you have to push forward, and you have to be on the cutting edge, because one bad class, one poor season that's coupled by another bad class, and you could absolutely set back a program for multiple seasons. So there's no time to waste. And certainly, you know, we're not going to waste any time.
Help me with this one, because, you know, when NIL was first on the scene, everybody said, no, you don't need a GM. And then revenue sharing, it becomes a thing. And they go, well, you do need a GM. Does a football program in today's world, does it need to operate a little like an NFL team with a player personnel or a general manager over the top? Or is that the head coach's job? Where do you stand on that?
The head coach has to do, like, it's a very different job now than it was 4 or 5 years ago. But you need I don't know if it's an NFL GM, because those guys have, like, their set price ranges, right? There's a cap, right? There's a range. And there is no range. There is no, like, fair market value. Like, it's all over the place. Whatever it's set at is essentially what someone is willing to pay. So you have to have a mathematical wizard. You have to have strong relationships. You have to have a really good eye, because your value picks and your value identifications end up being the real difference makers, you know, for your football team. But I think everybody's still trying to figure out what it really takes. But there's a lot. I know college football is making a lot more money, but it sure as hell spending a lot more money too.
All right, you got Louisville coming up on Friday. When do you start looking at film?
We already have. We started on Louisville today. They're excellent. I think they're one of the more talented teams really in the country. They've got explosive players everywhere. They're as well coached as you could imagine. I mean, they're, you know, Coach Brohm is, you know, one of the, if not the best play caller in the country, and their defense is playing some high level football. So, you know, we have to start early on them. They have a week off before us as well. So we're expecting a tremendous game and opportunity.
I look at Oregon and Dan Lanning and I see like Oregon figured something out, right? From they went from, hey, we're going to have the same coaching staff for like 30 years to Willie Taggart and then you, and they get some success. And then here comes Dan Lanning. And I kind of think if there's no Mario Cristobal success, maybe Oregon goes with a different blueprint. But, you know, former Alabama guy, guy's a really good recruiter. Do you know Lanning? Have you guys crossed paths at all?
Yeah, we have. We worked together at Oregon. I'm sorry, at Alabama.
Yeah.
I think everybody worked together there at some point in time or another, right, with Coach Saban. But you know what? Oregon was always doing great before myself and anyone else ever got there, and Oregon is doing great now. And again, I don't ever think the guys that came before myself, I should say, I'll stay to that part of it.
Yeah.
Ever got enough credit. I mean, those guys, if you watch film, and that was one thing that was always kind of neat, is just going into the film bank of the schematically what they did and how they made things work and some of the great identifications and recruiting and development they did. It was incredible. So much was learned there, and you know what? And they're doing awesome now as well. So always, always happy to see them do well.
All right. I know a lot of people in Eugene had fond memories of you, and I think a lot of people still in the Pacific Northwest following you and your family. Good luck to you this week, and I will see you down the road, and I appreciate you keeping in touch with us.
You got it, buddy. Thank you, man. Hey, and family's doing well, though?
Yeah, everybody's good, man. Three girls. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum as you, so I specialize in girls, but it's different. It's just different. They're all playing sports and having fun.
That's hilarious, man. Yeah. Good for you, brother. Enjoy every minute of it, man.
Yeah, I will. All right, take care.
All right, buddy.
There goes Mario Cristobal. If you think about the sliding doors element of Cristobal's tenure in Eugene, and think about this, like think about where college football is today. Okay. Look at the top three in the rankings. It's Ohio State. It's Miami. It's Oregon. That's 1, 2, 3. The head coach at Miami is Mario Cristobal. Let's go back to University of Oregon and think about how Oregon's trajectory factors in all of this. Mark Helfrich is fired after a disappointing season. Oregon decides it's going to go with Willie Taggart. Taggart brings Cristobal in as his offensive line coach. Taggart then leaves after a so-so year and goes to his alma mater, ditches out. Everybody's upset. Mario Cristobal jockeys behind the scenes with players. The players unanimously support him and go to bat for him with Rob Mullins, the athletic director, who in a panic situation, it's not the best of situations, promotes Mario Cristobal so they don't lose the recruiting class. They valued the recruiting class. Cristobal has some success. Is he still learning to be a coach even after his time at FIU where he got fired? Absolutely. He had a 27-47 record at FIU. That guy became the head coach at University of Oregon. He goes 9-4 in his first full season, wins that Red Box Bowl, that ugly Red Box Bowl. He goes 12-2 and wins a Rose Bowl the next year. Then comes pandemic season, 4-3, Fiesta Bowl. Then comes a 10-3 season and an Alamo Bowl and an exit to his alma mater at Miami. Cristobal leaves. He goes to Miami. He's got the blessing of having a 35-13 record at Oregon. Miami says we can hire this guy. Dan Lanning comes in Cristobal's wake. There are a lot of Oregon fans who go, Dan Lanning, man, I would have made that trade in a heartbeat. Dan Lanning, yes, young coach, better recruiting. But also, you have to recognize that the ecosystem came to the University of Oregon in a way that benefited Oregon better than just about any program in the country. Miami might be second. Miami and Oregon both have high-dollar donors who are fueling the recruiting element of the program, who are just, it just lines up so beautifully. So the number two and number three teams in the country are led by coaches who are only where they are because Oregon fired Mark Helfrich once upon a time and replaced him with Willie Taggart, who left. Cristobal, Lanning, you see how the dominoes fall. It's sliding doors. And I keep watching it, and I've been watching it since the preseason rankings came out, and I kind of looked at these two teams, and I thought, gosh, could Miami win the ACC? Could Oregon again win the Big Ten? Could they be on opposite sides of the college football playoff bracket? Could they meet for a national championship? Could they meet in a semifinal game or a quarterfinal game? It's the game I want. Mario Cristobal won't talk about it, but it's the game I want. I'd love to see it. Great stuff from Cristobal. Stick around. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. We get the big guess.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, you heard Mario Cristobal last segment, former Oregon coach, now at Miami, preparing for Louisville. He's got a bye, then he's got Louisville coming up. Stephen Vaughn, Mario Cristobal, how much credit should he get for Oregon being where Oregon is? And I'd love phone calls from Duck fans and casual observers at 503-417-7575. What do you make of Cristobal? He said it works out well for both sides. It sounds like he's happy at Miami, obviously, got to go home. I think he also knows Dan Lanning's doing a hell of a job at Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to give him some credit. I don't think it's a ton of credit. Like, if I'm doing a pie portion, maybe 15, 20%, maybe even a little less than that. Because we do forget at that time, after the Willie Taggart era, like, there were questions because Taggart had left. Cristobal was another, quote-unquote outsider that was coming out from Oregon. As you said in the interview, like, Oregon went from having, their coaching staff stay intact for, how many years, and then now they're going with another coach, right after Taggart. And so there was a question of, like, this guy failed at FIU, he was an assistant coach in Alabama, but, like, how successful can he be at the Pac-12 level with Oregon? And he really, he gets Justin Herbert like that, and that's going to help out Nick Panay Sewell, but he changed the way a lot of people view the Oregon program. Before, it was a lot of flash. It was all quick. It was, it was the uniforms. It was Chip Kelly. It was the fast break offense. Well, Cristobal wanted to build basically Oregon in the SEC. And I don't, he never quite got there. Lanning's trying to get that as well. Lanning might have it this season. But I think you have to give a lot of credit to just kind of the way people look at Oregon and change their minds on them nationally and took them seriously. I think Cristobal got him to that level. Now, he never did get, like, the biggest of big wins here, but I think he kind of built some type of foundation, and Lanning saw it and said, look, I can build off of this. I can take some of these guys that Cristobal's brought in, and we can build what I had envisioned this program to be. So I do give him some credit for this, but Lanning has taken it to a whole nother stratosphere. Somewhere that Mario Cristobal couldn't do. Now, if Cristobal had stayed, maybe he gets there. But Lanning just, sped it up and went fast track to get to that level that I think everyone, thought that it could get.
The butterfly effect or the sliding doors effect of Cristobal, Willie Taggart, really, or Mark Helfrich even. Helfrich went 4-8 and got fired. Then they hire Taggart, kind of a modest success in 1 year, and then he leaves, and all of a sudden Oregon, for the first time in its history, was going, are we a stepping stone program? I mean, I heard that from people at Oregon going, hey, do you think we're a stepping stone program? And they weren't, and Cristobal even said it there in the interview, not a stepping stone program. But I think what he did was he stabilized Oregon at a time in which Oregon was in this big pivot and transition from being, like, legacy coaches like Nick Aliotti, Steve Greatwood, Gary Campbell, Mike Bellotti, Rich Brooks. It was all of this trajectory and momentum from the past that suddenly was lost. Cristobal brought it back. He also, though, had his flaws. And I don't think Oregon gets to where it is now if he stays. And so I think it was good in a weird way that, he came in and he stabilized the program through four seasons. They go to a Rose Bowl. They win a Rose Bowl. Justin Herbert goes off to the NFL. Panay Sewell goes off to the NFL. Oregon's recruiting classes under Cristobal were the best ever. And then here came Dan Lanning behind him. And, you forget that those two guys coached together at Alabama. They learned it at the same place. But Lanning has got a little more dynamic appeal, and he's got more personality, and he's got a little more moxie to him. And so Mario Cristobal, who frustrated me at times because he put a straitjacket on the offense, kind of served a purpose. And then I think Oregon becomes a top five school when maybe under Cristobal they would have been a top 15 school and top 10 school with some regularity. I also think the era, the NIL era, pivoted directly into the path of Oregon and Miami. Both of those schools, I think, benefit greater than anybody in the country from what is going on in the Wild West that has happened. They've got donors. They have become rising powers in this era. And I think Cristobal and Dan Lanning, I like to see these teams play in the postseason. I want to go to the phone lines, 503-417-7575. I'd love to see Oregon-Miami as a quarterfinal or semifinal or championship game. That would be a lot of fun for me, selfishly. David is in Astoria. David, what's up, man?
Well, I want to see that game, too. I want to see it a lot. But mostly I called to say thank you for having him on. I love when you have interviews with substance. I get weary of coach speak and press conference speak, and Mario Cristobal did a great job. I really love that interview. But I want a reality check, too. I color me one of those that said, yeah, I'll make that swap in a heartbeat, Cristobal for Lanning. I didn't think, even before Cristobal left, I didn't think we were going to get very far, very much further with him as the coach because of the X's and O's issues, because of the defensive mindset and the offensive, what I viewed as a sort of weakness. And now I see he's got a team ranked number two. You think we can put that down to the NIL setting him up for getting to his own personal next level?
Yeah, I think you have to. And I think you have to look at what happened with NIL and what happened at schools like Miami, where John Ruiz, who was the NIL king, they called him Miami's NIL king on ESPN. He committed millions of dollars to Miami athletes in NIL deals. He lost a ton of money last year, and there was a bunch of talk about him kind of, you know, struggling to keep his donations coming to Miami. That is a big factor for Mario Cristobal. But no doubt, Ruiz at Miami, Phil Knight at Oregon, the Boulevard Collective at SMU, there are a handful of entities in college football who have basically thrown rocket fuel on the football programs. And these NIL collectives, I remember talking to SMU, and I literally was talking to Boss Hogg from the Dukes of Hazzard, who was, you know, behind the scenes at the Boulevard Collective. There's a bunch of these guys in the petroleum industry. I'm on the phone with these guys at the time when SMU was rumored to be coming to the Pac-12, and I'm talking to them about the buyout in the American. And these guys were going, I was like, the buyout's going to be like $17 million. They're like, $17 million? Hasta la vista, baby. We'll write the check today. Like, these guys were just ready to go. And look at what they did. They subsidized SMU's move to the ACC. They said, we don't need meter rights money. We got oil money. And so John Ruiz at Miami told Mario Cristobal, come take this job, and I'm going to come up with, $500,000 deals, $1 million deals. This John Ruiz is fueling what is happening at Miami, and the latest being Carson Beck. Last year was Cam Ward. Miami's got money. And so, yes, I think Mario Cristobal is still Mario Cristobal. It was evident in the game the other day. You know, they had this lead after three quarters against Florida State. They were dominating. And then Mario went into a shell in the fourth quarter. Where have I seen that before? They lose the fourth quarter 19-0 and win the football game. Oregon fans, you know, like, Steven, you've seen that. You've seen that play. You've been to that puppet show before. You watched Cristobal over the years. He lost a couple games at Oregon. He should have won because he went into a shell. He almost did it against Florida State. I think Cristobal will succeed. I think he needs an offensive coordinator who's going to push him. I also think he needs to understand you got, in this era, points. Keep the pedal to the metal. Keep scoring points. Don't go into a shell. But I think the ultimate thing is he will win games when he has better talent. He does that. I don't necessarily think he's ever going to outcoach anybody, but I think he's going to out-recruit people. And I think it's very similar to James Franklin at Penn State, and draws some similarities to Dan Lanning at Oregon, except I think Dan Lanning at Oregon's got Will Stein, and I think Will Stein's a really good play caller.
Yeah, that's what I was going to make the comparison to, is Dan Lanning. Is Lanning's kind of had that reputation of, well, can we trust him in a big time game where it's close because of the whole Washington situation up in Seattle when he goes for it on fourth down every time they don't get it? I think Lanning's kind of answered those questions with the win against Ohio State, the win on the road this year against Penn State. I don't think Lanning gets questioned as much about that anymore. Where you do look at Mario Cristobal, And yeah, I remember a couple years ago, it was against Georgia Tech. All he had to do was kneel on the ball. He decides to run. They fumble. Georgia Tech hits a Hail Mary. They win the game. Then earlier this year, in game one against Notre Dame, John, remember, he didn't realize that Notre Dame had a timeout. And he decides just to run the ball up the middle. He thought the clock was going to continue to run. You could see him like mouth it. I just thought the clock was running. And it's those type of mistakes that have cost him in the past. And it still makes you question, like, can he, you know, get Miami over the hump? Last season with Cam Ward, the Heisman Trophy winner, number one overall pick, all they got to do is win at Syracuse. They're up by, I believe, 3 scores, and they end up losing that ball game. There's still a lot of questions when it comes to coaching with Mario Cristobal on the field. But off the field, recruiting-wise, that guy gets it done. And you combine that with the Miami money, just like you combined it with the Oregon money, he's going to put together some stellar recruiting classes. And you're right, you get the talent in there at Miami in the ACC, you're going to be in the College Football Playoff more likely than not.
I think Oregon is one of the best jobs in the country. I think there are like maybe 5 jobs that I see that stand above them all. Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame, Oregon, and I would put Miami in that category right now. I think they've got resources that others do not. I think it's going to be very interesting to see the CFP rankings when they come out in the initial week, because the thing that jumped out to me in the AP Top 25 was there are some schools that are really spending, like Texas Tech, who are now in the top 10, and there are some schools who are really spending who are not in the top 25. Texas and Penn State being out of the top 25 is ridiculous to me. This is like the Mets or the Yankees outspending everybody in Major League Baseball and going, hey, you're not even a playoff team, right? Like, people get fired for that. And I think, you know, James Franklin, the joke was made over the weekend. James Franklin got tired of people hearing he can't win the big one, so he went and lost a little one, you know, losing to UCLA over the weekend. And so, like you have to give credit, because part of the job is recruiting. And you heard Cristobal. When he's talking about how the job has changed, he has adapted. Dan Lanning has adapted. These guys have become different head coaches, and I think that's commendable.
You know what else he said, John, though, is you talked about it, like, is it difficult? And he goes, it is, but have you met me? Have you met my personality?
Yeah.
This is what I'm built to do. And I think that's the big one, John, because I look at a team like Oregon State. Is Trent Bray, was he built to do this? I don't know. But you have to be built a different type of way now in college football to get it done, because it is 24/7, 365. There are no days off. There's no time to sit back and relax. You're either recruiting, coaching, you know, talking to donors, trying to raise money. You're doing something at all times. And I think guys like Mario Cristobal, Dan Lanning, their personality fits that to a T, and that's why they are succeeding so far. You know,
I just wonder about burnout, though, with those guys, because they go... You know, they go full throttle. Like, they are out, and the energy, like, somebody asked me in the Monday mailbag today, what's Dan Lanning's caffeine intake like? Because you saw him on the field after the Penn State game. People are going, is he on something? Like, you know, he is. He's on adrenaline. Like, you know, he's coaching a game, and he's like, that's the high, right? But I've also been around these guys. I was around Mario Cristobal when he got a commitment one time from a 5-star recruit. I was at lunch with him. His phone rings. It's a recruit on the other end of the phone. He like leans away and takes the call. And when he comes back, he hangs up. He had a celebration moment personally that was like fist pumping. He's in a suit jacket, like he's in a sport coat, and he's pumping his fist like, you know, it's Jerry Maguire, like running down the tunnel in that movie. Like, he is like the adrenaline that these guys have and that they operate on is next level. I just wonder how sustainable it is. I do think we're going to see burnout from this generation of coaches. I don't think these guys are going to coach 20-year things. Like, we're not going to see. Plus, the money's too good. They're going to make all the money they need. I think these guys are more like 10-year coaches. And then they go, hey, I need to do something else because I'm just, you know, I can't do this. It's not sustainable.
Does it change when there's the revenue sharing type of thing and you can't really spend more than the salary cap entails?
You heard Cristobal. I mean, you know, he kind of talked about it without talking about it. There is revenue sharing of $20.5 million they're allowed to do. The NIL collectives have no cap. So the NIL collective at Miami and the NIL collective at Oregon and the NIL collective at SMU, they're rubbing their hands together going, we can outspend everybody as long as these deals are legit. Okay, let's come up with some legit deals that nobody can match. And so it is like the Kawhi Leonard deal with the Clippers. Like, you know, not every deal's good deal. Right. Like, you know, the Clippers allegedly have come up with this deal that mirrors kind of what happens in the NIL world, if we're being honest. But that not all these deals are legit, but and not all of them are good, and not all the players play. Like, if you ask the Clippers, hey, was that money well spent, or you ask that third party, was it money well spent, I think everybody would go, no, it was a bad deal. But I think, you know, it gives the top schools a wider berth. Like, they can afford to make a bunch of deals and go, okay, it didn't really work out. Damian Martinez goes to Miami on a deal that pays him $1 million, right? He barely played at Miami. He probably would have been better just staying at Oregon State and collecting the money. But I remember talking to Cristobal after he got Damian Martinez. He got depth. He got another playmaker. He got, you know, already had Cam Ward. Now they got Carson Beck. Like, the Miami is just going to reload and reload and reload, and I think Cristobal is going to be fine there. I wonder about his ability to win a national championship, though, because I think ultimately, yes, you have to have good players, but you're going to get in championship games against other guys who have good players. And that's where I think Cristobal gets in trouble. And that's why I'd love to see Dan Lanning against Mario Cristobal, because I think Dan Lanning could outcoach him in an X and O game. And I think that's the game I want to see. I'm telling you right now, I feel like we're headed to that this season. Miami's well positioned. Oregon's well positioned. I kind of want them to be on the opposite side of the bracket. So, you know, look, the state of Oregon could get this wonderful CFP title game with all these tentacles, and it's the Lanning kids against the Cristobal kids, you know, playing football in the parking lot before the game. Like, I just think there's a lot there. All right, Punch and Audio is coming up, plus the 5 at 5 top of the hour. We're going to take you right into Monday Night Football. Leave it here.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I have had the craziest time getting a guest on the show that I have been trying to get on the show for a while. Have you heard of Joe Moglia, Stephen? Joe Moglia?
I feel like I have, but I can't put a face or anything to it.
So he was the head coach at Coastal Carolina for a while. He's a businessman, entrepreneur. He's been, you know, he's in his 70s. He's, you know, he's a CEO. He's been really outspoken. Former CEO and chairman of TD Ameritrade. So he's been out. He's got like this weird blend of, hey, I've been a football coach and I've been a CEO. He's got a lot of leadership DNA, Coastal Carolina coach. But he's got a team of people that, I mean, I had an easier time getting the president on the show. And they keep responding to me, people from his team going, well, what do you want to talk about? What is this thing? He's coming on tomorrow. And I'm like, it's a phone interview. It just airs in Oregon. We're going to talk about college sports. I want to get his thoughts on leadership. I want to get his thoughts on the ecosystem of college athletics and what he sees happening. You know, he's got this background in business as a CEO, former college football coach. Really interesting guy. I've heard some interviews he's done, and I'm like, I'm interested in what he's talking about. And man, it's been like 2 weeks of layers, and then finally getting down to the interview's supposed to take place tomorrow. And now they're peppering me with, what do you want to ask him? I'm like, we're just gonna talk. We had the president on the show. We had Mike Tyson on the show. We've had Howie Mandel on the show. We've had Norm Macdonald on the show. We're just gonna talk. If he wants to talk, I'm happy to do this interview. I'm just kind of at the point where I'm dying to know once he gets on. Like, and my experience has been once the guest gets on the show and all the layers of people trying to worry about their jobs go away, the interview is fantastic. And so I'm just trying to get to Joe. Joe's got a team of people around him. Very interesting to process. This is tougher than getting the president on the show once upon a time. All right, let's play a little Punch It Audio in this segment.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters. Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio. Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, Paula Feinbaum had an interesting moment, a tense moment today. He was on the Clay Travis show. And the rumor is that ESPN is pulling Feinbaum because he did the Clay Travis show. Here's Feinbaum with a caller.
The only other thing I wanted to say, Paul, was I saw a blurb that you've been pulled off of some of the ESPN.
Okay, let's continue here and talk to Don in Missouri.
Paul Feinbaum wants to dive into politics. He's talked about considering running for office. Sounds uncomfortable there. I got news for you. This guy, me, no, I'm not getting into politics. I'm not going anywhere political. Forget it. We'll never have that. Hey, I heard you did this show and you want to talk. Nope, not happening. Paul Feinbaum in an uncomfortable moment. This was another uncomfortable moment. Imari DeMarcado fumbling the ball through the end zone. At the end of this game and the way that this game broke down was so heart-wrenching.
On third and short. First down, DeMarcado off to the races. 20-10 touchdown.
Did he drop it early? Boy, that's going to be close.
Oh, my goodness. Boy, he extended it with his hand a little bit.
Did Snead? Snead's trying to say that he got the ball out. Wow.
You see him kind of put it on his fingertips, but did he have control?
Well, he lost the ball. His coach, Jonathan Gannon, livid on the sideline after the fumble from DeMarcado. And it's the third time this season that the Cardinals have let a win kind of slip through their fingers. Here he is after the game.
Take us through that play there. What happened?
I just made a mistake. There's really no excuse there. Just let the ball go through.
What was going through your mind as you were crossing the goal line there?
I mean, obviously emotional, big play. But I just got to be smarter.
I saw interaction with you and JG on the sideline. Looks like he came over. Looks like he was pretty heated. What did he say to you in that moment?
Nothing. Just got to be smarter. It's as simple as that.
Got to be smarter. He blew it. It was a painful loss for the Cardinals.
How does this happen continually, John?
You got to run through the line. You got to run through the line,
How do people not learn to make sure they do it? I don't get it.
If I am a coach, I am telling guys, you run through and you hand the ball to the official. That's how we do it. Steve Sarkisian in Texas, how are they 3-2 with no wins over a Power 4 team?
I don't know if I'm stunned. I mean, how many teams are there in college football? 136? Take the other 135 and have them go play at Ohio State and at the Swamp. See how they do.
Yeah, give them the rest of your non-conference schedule. They'll be just fine.
South Florida went into the Swamp and won, just saying.
Yeah, they'd probably be 3-2. a lot of other teams. But some teams might be a little better, and we expect Texas to be better. James Franklin at Penn State, Steve Sarkisian at Texas, 0 wins against Power 4 conference opponents. Both of them, 0 wins. And guess what? You got a loss to Florida. That's a bad loss. And Franklin's got a loss to UCLA. That's a bad loss.
Can I say this right now? Penn State should not go to the college football playoff no matter what. A loss to UCLA, you don't deserve to play for a national championship.
Does it raise questions about Oregon's resume in your mind?
No, not in my mind. I thought it's going to be a tough environment no matter what.
I don't know who's good anymore. And I think college football is giving us the NFL, where teams beat teams sometimes and it doesn't make sense. We watch the best team in the NFL go and lay an egg. And now, we watch. I think we're headed to a system in college football where these guys know they have mulligans. They don't play well. It's okay. They got to come back the next week. The name of the game now is not going undefeated. It's going 10-2. UCLA had a special day. Big, big win over Penn State. Jerry Neuheisel was the play caller.
The first thing I want to say is I love UCLA more than anything. And the kind of kids that you see that played on that field today is exactly why you love a place like this. We had 2 days to practice the new game plan. And all they did was believe. And we came out and played as hard as we could for 60 full minutes. Had to take a safety at the end because we messed it up a little bit. But, like, how can you not love college football when you have days like this? Special, special, special.
Really special stuff for a guy who had not called plays. Gosh, he sounds so much like his dad, Rick, in that clip. And his father on CBS in the on the studio show, just pumping his fist, proud parent. It's like watching a parent watch a kid score a goal in their first soccer game. It, you know, there was just such pride there, such a cool moment, cool thing to see. Kurt Cignetti in Indiana will be traveling to Autzen Stadium where they'll play Dan Lanning in Oregon. Here's Cignetti talking about Lanning.
Probably one of the most impressive young coaching phenoms to come around in a while, I would say. Haven't been in this game for a little bit. They're a great football team. Looking forward to the challenge, confidence in our team.
This game is shaping up to be much bigger test for Oregon than maybe I thought before. And by the way, good job of Cignetti in saying nothing inflammatory there.
Mike Gundy started a whole thing, John. Like, no coach is ever going to give Lanning any type of ammo for anything. I mean, they are going to be on their P's and Q's, on their best behavior every press conference now.
The greatest thing ever. Wow, what a guy. I'm not going to say crap that's going to get Oregon and their bulletin board, their video bulletin board out. But this game's shaping up to be a much bigger game than maybe we imagined when the schedule came out at the beginning of the season. It'll be a nice test for Oregon. People keep asking me who I like. I like the Ducks. They're at home. I also think, like, Oregon's got to be careful. Just like things can change. Mario Cristobal said it. You know, things can change on a dime. You lose to Indiana, all of a sudden you're in a situation where your best win is against a Penn State team that's probably not a playoff team right now. Like, you know, like, so you got to be a little careful of your Oregon. I'm not saying it's a must win because I think, you know, 11-1, 10-2, Oregon gets in. I think they've got two mulligans, but you don't want to give one up at home. And that's what's coming with this Indiana game. I think Indiana will score some points on Oregon, but I like the Ducks at home. How about you, Steven?
Yeah, I think I'd lean towards the Ducks. You know, interesting, Fernando Mendoza, former Cal quarterback, is now at Indiana. That offense has been really good all season long, but when they went to Iowa, they struggled offensively. I kind of expected a little bit the same thing going to Eugene.
Yeah, I think I think Oregon will just flat out score them. That's what it comes down to. But we shall see, as they say. Mariners pivotal game 3 against the Detroit Tigers tomorrow. It'll be right here on 750 The Game. We'll have the coverage of that game. I hope you tune in for it. And the BFT will follow that baseball game. Coming up, we're going to do the 5 at 5, lead you right into Monday Night Football. Stick around.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Oh, the Mariners. Can they do it? Can they get to the ALCS? Can they get to the World Series? Can they win it all? Sure, certainly they can. They're good enough. But baseball, funny game. Mariners in this game 3, a slight favorite to win game 3 on DraftKings. Steven, you feeling good about it? Or as someone who's seen the Mariners over the years, are you a little bit scarred?
I mean, there's always that part in you where it's like, man, I've seen this team blow it so many times. But I think that this team's a little different. I think that they can, even though they haven't hit well so far in the playoffs, I think that their bats can come alive. And Kyle Raleigh's different. I think the Mariners are... I like them. I think that they can win the AL because they got past Skubal. That's the thing, John. The winning game 2 against Tarik Skubal was so big in my mind. I'll take the Mariners. Give me the Mariners in the AL.
All right. He likes the Mariners. How about you? See this game. We're about 20 hours away from this game. First pitch of game 3. All right. Let's do the 5 at 5. We'll lead you right into Monday Night Football right here.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Well, I'm buying the Mariners, but team I'm not buying is the Oregon State Beavers, and they lost to Appalachian State on Saturday. Now they have made a move. Oregon State has let go of special teams coordinator Jamie Christian. Maybe a move that should have happened a couple weeks before, but they never did it. They did it officially over the weekend. Trent Bray, and they made a statement on that one. So Oregon State, let's go to the special teams coordinator. They lose. And now Oregon State is one of three teams, John, in the FBS that does not have a win yet. The other two is Sam Houston State, who actually plays Oregon State this year, in Corvallis later on this year, and UMass. So it has not been a very good season, and now Oregon State has made a move. They will be looking to get a new special teams coordinator next season.
Yeah, look, this is a move that you can afford to make if you're Oregon State. The problem is it's a reactive move. It's not a proactive move. It would look a lot better if Oregon State had made this move proactively after the Week 2 loss to Fresno State. I think they waited too long. I think it ends up looking like they're reactionary. It ends up looking like it's a defensive move or a weak move that is made by the athletic department. And in that, I think it's really difficult for Oregon State to look like they're doing anything right now. Football is going to lead the way. They have to go win games. That's the bottom line. It'll be Wake Forest up next. That is a tougher than advertised task for an 0-6 team, but we shall see.
Number two.
And last week we were talking about Oregon State and Blueprint Sports, remember the NIL managing company. Well, they were in the news today as the University of Arkansas has officially ended its relationship with Blueprint Sports. They said, Arkansas said, quote, "The efforts of the Arkansas Edge staff and support for members over the past few years is greatly appreciated and filled an important role for the success of Arkansas athletics. However, there's a different path forward in the new era of college athletics, and that is in the best interest for the sustained success of the Arkansas Razorbacks." Of course, this comes out just less than a week after Blueprint Sports came under fire publicly when details of that deal with Oregon State emerged. Blueprint Sports, of course, they keep 75% of the net revenue, up to $1.15 million for the Beavs once it gets past $750,000. And then after the $1.15 million, they get 50%. So Arkansas fans were actually saw that report of the Oregon State deal, John, and they immediately began to question what the Razorbacks deal was with Blueprint Sports. They were really furious about it. But Trey Biddy of On3 Sports, he reported over the weekend that Arkansas's deal is actually much different than Oregon State. Didn't actually say what the percentages were. I don't think that was public. But he said it is better than the Oregon State deal, which makes me think, man, like, is Oregon State, did they sign a really bad deal with Blueprint Sports? Or, like, what is going on here? It just gets worse and worse over in Corvallis.
Yeah, I think you have to be asking yourself, and I asked this question of Brett Blaylock, the chief operating officer at Oregon State. I said, what is the out in this deal? He said there were some outs that are inside the deal. It looks like Arkansas is exercising one. I will not be surprised if Oregon State is right behind him. We'll stay tuned on that front.
Number three.
And I talked about this during the summertime, but UFC, they were planning on having a fight outside of the White House, and now we officially have a date of when that fight will take place. It'll be June 14th of 2026. UFC will have a big fight right outside the White House on the White House grounds. And coincidentally enough, that is President Trump's 80th birthday, which will be June 14th. So kind of a cool event. I don't, you know, I'm not a big UFC guy, but I kind of want to see what it looks like. I think it's a good idea. You know, it's kind of like when Major League Baseball plays in the Field of Dreams, or they do, you know, the NHL, the hockey games in the outside football stadiums. UFC will have the fight on the White House grounds. Seems a little weird, but I kind of want to see it.
Here we go. Bring on the dancing bears. Things you never thought you'd see, but we're bound to see.
Number four.
And the OSAA, the Delegate Assembly, they have voted to sanction boys volleyball as a new sport in the association starting in the spring of 2026. Now, this sport of boys volleyball has been an emerging activity for the past two seasons, but this is the first new sanctioned sport by the OSAA since girls wrestling in the spring of 2023. And Oregon will be the 26th state to sanction boys volleyball as a sport. Next up on the docket for the OSAA Delegate Assembly is girls flag football, as that is in the second year of a two-year emerging sport status, and will be eligible to be voted on at the October 2026 Delegate Assembly meeting to become an actual sanctioned sport in the OSAA. So that would be pretty cool to see girls flag football. I'll tell you this, John. It says the boys volleyball will be in spring of 2026. That's like baseball season, track season for me. I think I might have played boys volleyball, to be honest with you. I loved playing it in PE. Like, go from playing basketball into boys volleyball. I'd kind of be down with that. I love this. I love this idea to have boys volleyball as a real sport.
It tells me there's interest in boys volleyball, much in the same way. Like, I'm fascinated to see what happens with girls flag football becoming a big thing. Yeah, look, you know, being a dad who watched a daughter play club volleyball, I always looked when, you know, occasionally there would be a boy playing on the other team because they didn't have boys club volleyball at the time. And I thought, gosh, there should be an outlet for that. There should be a place for that. These kids should not be competing against each other. And here it comes as a sanctioned high school sport.
Number five.
Yeah, the OSAA, John, doesn't always get it right, but they did something right there. So give them a little bit of credit.
Tiny bit of credit. I have some other bones to pick.
I got a lot of bees with them
as
well.
Not today.
Today is a day of rejoicing and celebrating.
All right, you got it right.
All right. We got a...
Keep it up.
Yeah, can we keep it up? That's the thing. No. It's like, you know, Mario Cristobal. Can he actually coach a big game? Can OSA keep it up? We'll see what happens.
Here's the other thing, though. Like, before you get to five, you don't want to lower the bar for any entity that has consistently maybe failed you or let you down or disappointed you. You don't want to lower the bar. I know a guy who spent some time in prison, and his mother... I just shudder at this. I saw this one time. You know, I was over their house, and the guy took the trash out, and the mom made a big deal about it. Oh, he took the trash out. Oh, he took the cans out to the curb. And I was like, you're getting applauded for that now? And she's like, you don't know what he's, you know, where he was. He was in prison. I was like, maybe he was in prison because the bar was low. Let's raise the bar above getting the trash to the curb over here. Like, come on now. So let's keep the bar high for OSAA. I'm not saying they've been to prison, but come on. Number five.
Very fair. Sneaky good Monday night football game tonight, John. Kansas City Chiefs 2-2 at the 3-1 Jacksonville Jaguars. Chiefs are 3.5-point favorites on the road. Give me the Jags on the money line. I just looked. Ooh. Plus 170. I'm all over that. Trevor Lawrence. Travis Hunter has kind of been a disappointment, John. I was really looking forward to him this season after being the number two overall pick. He hasn't really played a ton offensively or defensively. I kind of think he might, you know, they might draw something up for him today. You know, Monday night game, everyone's watching. Give me the Jags money line, baby.
All right. Plus 164 now. It must be,
I got the proof. I got the bet slip. I can post it if you want to see 170.
It must be our listeners jumping all over it. So there it goes. The Jags also getting 3.5 if you like them with the points. So we'll see. We'll lead you right into that Chiefs-Jaguars game. Here on Monday Night Football. Mariners, do you like the Mariners to win it, win this series against Detroit? You always said you did. Mm-hmm. You can bet on them to win in five. If they win in five, you get them at 6-1.
Yeah.
How do you like that?
That's the bet, I think, right?
Yeah, let this be a nice long series. Doesn't matter who wins game three, but then, you know, the other team comes back to win game four, and then it forces a winner-take-all game five, and all of a sudden you're at 6-1. So, if you believe in the Mariners, maybe you believe in Mariners in a slow burn. Maybe that's the way to do it. All right, grab a podcast of this show. Mario Cristobal was fantastic in the 4 o'clock hour. Thanks, Mario, for joining us. A very conversational conversation with Mario Cristobal. Not a lot of coach speak. Also, Angie Machado, fantastic, fresh off of her voyage into Costco. Talked about Oregon State's woes. We are back tomorrow with another great show. Hopefully, on tomorrow's program, we will be visited by a very important guest that I've been efforting to get on the show, Joe Moglia, the former CEO of TD Ameritrade and head football coach at Coastal Carolina, supposed to join us if I can get past his people. His people are a little bit annoying. I'm going to talk to him about that, plus what his thoughts on the view of college athletics as a whole. The bald-faced truth is not here for a long time, just a good time. Have a great night, everybody.